you with, dog?
With the Bucks, dog.
You sure you with the skills?
All the way, Raymond James, dog.
Jack Wallace,
dog.
Man, you crazy.
Dolphins? Fucking is, dog.
Cowboys?
I'm talking about the Buck, bro. Welcome to Tampa.
This is the Pewter Plank Podcast. My name is Ken Volke. I'm joined with Leo Howell. We are both writers at thepewterplank.com. And things have changed quite a bit at One Buck Place. We obviously have talked about quite a bit. Lovie Smith, Jason Light have come in, and they've essentially taken a bomb and blown up the roster. Six new players, as well as many, many players going out. We're going to spend the next about half an hour or so talking mostly about the players coming in and talking about some of the ones going out, of course, one of which we're going to pass on for now and leave that heated discussion towards slightly later. But let's start with the names that have come in. Some good names, I think, for sure. Anthony Collins, Michael Johnson, Josh McCown, Clinton McDonald, Brandon Myers, Alteron Werner. Leo, what do you take on the six additions that have come in?
I really think that there's some good players, but more importantly, that there's good value on all of them. Werner's the only one who stands out to me as a truly potential special player. The rest of them are just kind of solid players or have the potential to be good. I mean, Johnson's a good player. I just maybe don't see the special edge to him in terms of something elite that he does. But I feel like they're all good values, and I think that's the best thing, is that Werner's deal at just over $6 million a year was a great deal. Johnson's deal was pretty reasonable, considering it was right around the dollar figure that Everson Griffin got with the Vikings. Anthony Collins is cheaper than the player he's replacing, Donald Penn, and Clinton McDonald for only $3 million to provide some extra pass rush on the defensive line, I think is a really good deal. So my initial thought of the whole group is that there's some really good value there. But we definitely kind of want to take a specific look at all of them, and also, you know, the guys who are leaving. Like you said, we just mentioned Donald Penn. Of course, Davin Joseph was a little earlier in the process, but he's been let go. Adam Hayward, Ted Larson, and Dakota Watson have all been signed elsewhere as well. And so we'll touch on them, although none of them are really, you know, I'm not shedding any tears over those particular players. And Jonathan Casillas and Jamon Meredith, along with Eric Page, De'Veron Carr, and Danny Gore have all been brought back. Again, these are all just kind of, Casillas is the only one who could potentially start at strong side linebacker. Other than that, it's just kind of a bunch of guys who we've talked about before. None of them are blatantly awful. They're all kind of just, they are what they are. They're just a guy. But I think the big news is the new arrivals. And let's start with the first one that we learned about, which was Michael Johnson. And I'm curious for your thoughts on Johnson as sort of the pass rusher that the Bucs sought out, the building from the front back, as Lovie likes to say, from the line backwards. What are your thoughts on Johnson and how he'll impact the front seven of the defense?
Well, I think Michael Johnson is definitely a guy that has the potential to do quite a bit for this team, as he's shown in the past. I think he had 12 and a half sacks a couple of years ago with the Bengals. But last year, there was a certain dip in what he was able to do. And the reason, I think, for it was because Geno Atkins went out. And pairing him up with a guy like Gerald McCoy, I think it puts him in a very similar position to where he was in Cincinnati. So I'm actually pretty excited about him, because we've seen what Gerald McCoy has been able to do, even with absolutely nothing on the ends. And I personally have not been enamored at all with what Claiborne's been able to do. I think Bowers is becoming almost a nobody. It's getting to the point where, unless Lovie can revitalize any of these guys, they're all pretty much gone. So Johnson's going to have to be the guy. And I think bringing him in, putting him right next to Gerald, I really like. There's one thing I didn't like about it, and that was what I heard from him. When he came in, he pretty much demanded he was going to play on one side of the line. And Lovie essentially looked at him and said, I think we can make that work. I don't really like that, especially from what we believe is a defensive guru, and he's proved in his past that he is, that Lovie Smith should be making this decision. If he believes he should play on the left, Michael Johnson should play on the left. If he believes Michael Johnson should play on the right, he should play on the right. It's not Michael Johnson's decision. So for me, I didn't really like hearing that instantly he comes in, signs this big contract, and is making demands to allow the Bucs to actually get him into Tampa. I didn't really like that, but I think he'll be all right. I think he's going to be able to do a good job, and putting him right next to McCoy, I think we're in a lot better shape than they were without Michael Johnson.
Yeah, I think the concern with Johnson is the pass rushing. I'm not overly concerned with him playing on the right, just because that's one of those things where that's what he's done in the past. That's where he's been. It's easy to say, like, you don't want him being too demanding on a situation like that, but at the same time, you don't usually move guys in a position if you're seeking them and you're paying them big free agent money. It's not right to change what they're doing.
Right, and that makes sense to me.
So that is something to consider with that. But on the other hand, I mean, the concern with Johnson is that he only had 3.5 sacks last year. His pass rushing productivity as a whole, and when you count in hurries and hits and things like that, was okay. It was on par with some of the other top guys, but it wasn't great. He's not a Robert Quinn. He's not a Greg Hardy. He's not even on that DeMarcus Ware kind of level of maybe an older guy who's still able to perform at getting after the quarterback. What he brings, and I think what his floor is a better version of Adrian Claiborne. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I do think it means that there may eventually be a need to bring in a pass rusher at some point, but that's only if he doesn't recapture that 11.5 sack performance, because that saw him closer to the top 10 of pass rushers versus last year when he was further down the pack. And this is using Pro Football Focus statistics, which encompass everything, not just sacks, because sacks don't always tell the whole story. You can have a guy who gets a lot of sacks but isn't getting consistent pressure. That's something that a guy like Jared Allen last year had. He got his sacks, but he didn't have consistent pressure. And you want, particularly in this defense where you're not blitzing very often, you want to make sure that you're getting pressure as often as you can. So I think that that's important, and that's something that Johnson may not provide on an elite level. That said, I think he's better than Taquan Bowers. I think he's better than Daniel Teo-Nisham. So,
well, who isn't?
It's an instant upgrade in that regard. He's an excellent run defender, and he's actually got some J.J. Watt pass swatting abilities as well, which is something we haven't had in a while.
See, I think he's a lot like a wide receiver playing with a quarterback. When Geno Atkins went out, it's essentially like Peyton Manning going out if you're a wide receiver. It's just not going to be the same. It won't at all. And to sign a guy like Michael Johnson and expect him to come in and just dominate even without Gerald McCoy, then we'd be in a bad spot. But the expectation is, with Gerald McCoy next to him, he's going to be able to do more so what he was able to do with Geno Atkins than without him. And if you watched that Bengals team, which I'll admit I watched basically every game because I had a long future bet on them, which paid off, thank you. But they really didn't look the same the second Geno Atkins went out. Mm-hmm. The pass rush really became not as much. And that is, like you said, a concern with Michael Johnson, that without McCoy, he may not be at the same level. But I think the thought is bringing him in. We know what he was able to do next to an elite tackle. We have one of those. Let's get him in here.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I'm not really worried about him paying off. My only concern is that he may not bring the pass rush that we thought we were getting. But that brings us to the next point.
And the price wasn't that bad, was it?
The next player we'll talk about, which it was Clinton McDonald, who is actually, I think he was actually the first player that was officially confirmed by a media source after free agency started. He comes from Seattle. He's a 5-year veteran, and he is an interior defensive lineman who is very capable at rushing the passer. And so this is just another step in making sure that Michael Johnson is getting the best matchups outside, because if there's a passing situation and you've got Gerald McCoy and Clinton McDonald on the inside, first of all, you probably would try to run if you could, if it was short enough distance. But if it's long down in distance and you can't run, those two guys are going to win their matchups when they're lined up over the guard. And that's a big concern. McDonald was signed to a cheap contract, only $3 million per year, no signing bonuses. He's in his prime right now. He actually lost some weight last year, similar to how Gerald did for the Bucks, and it kind of showed in the way he played. He was more disruptive. He was able to penetrate better. And, I mean, obviously, he comes from the Seahawks. He comes from a good pedigree of developing defensive linemen. And I feel like that's maybe going to be the signing that people don't respect enough to see that guy coming in on third down or even coming in to replace Gerald every once in a while, because I don't think that it's a best idea to have Gerald McCoy out there for 1,100 snaps a season. So just to keep Gerald fresh and to give Gerald a partner in the middle who can truly get after the passer, I think is a huge asset.
I think the price was right, and I like the deal mainly because the price was right. I don't think we are going to see much of Clinton McDonald as far as making splash plays. He's kind of going to be a guy that's going to plug it up, and if it does get to the quarterback, it's probably because there was extra heavy pressure on Gerald McCoy. So for me, I think that's a spot that it's kind of like a non-Revis cornerback where it's like, yeah, you should be okay because it's going to get easier for you. I'm not thrilled with Clinton McDonald. I've went back and watched a little bit on him. He doesn't scream good player, great player to me. So I'm not really that enamored with that one. The only reason why I'm not upset about it is because they barely paid him anything. So I'm okay. It's kind of a whatever type of deal for me. I'm not mad about it. I'm not thrilled about it. I don't think that position is going to make a huge difference, because that position is basically just push back and try to get room to make it so that Gerald has an easier time and then help make it easier on the outsides. Bigger guys, the better, but like you said, he can get to the quarterback, but I didn't know who Clinton McDonald was, and I watched the Super Bowl, and I watched most of Seattle going through the playoffs. So, I mean, he's not a guy that you're going to know his name much, and I don't think come opening day, we're not even going to remember Clinton McDonald. We're going to be talking a lot more about Johnson, Werner, some of the other guys that are new. I don't think you're going to talk too much about Clinton McDonald.
Well, here is one thing to consider. I'll go back to Pro Football Focus here. Using their pass rush productivity for all defensive tackles and nose tackles last season, Gerald McCoy was first, and Ndamukong Suh was second, Geno Atkins was fourth, Jason Hatcher of Dallas was seventh, Terrence Knighton of the Broncos, who pot roast, he was eighth. Kawan Short of the Panthers was 10th. Nick Fairley was 14th. Clinton McDonald is 8th. He's right there. He's right among those guys because he got after the passer on a consistent basis. He had 34 pressures on 305 snaps. So of every 10 plays he's on the field for a passing play, he's getting after the quarterback.
But how much does that have to do with being on the Super Bowl champion defense and one of the best defenses the league's ever seen?
As far as I'm aware, they're not giving out like 5 hurries per play if all 5 guys are in there after the quarterback. It's kind of the person who gets the disruption is the one who gets the total for it. So yes, he's helped by the people around him, but when he's going to have Gerald McCoy and Michael Johnson, and you know, the other spot is still up for debate as to how good it'll be, but he's going to be in a similarly good situation in Tampa. So I'm not saying that he's going to be a top 10 guy again, but he's very capable of getting after the quarterback, and that's what he was brought in to do. Lovie specifically said, we have an under-tackle position and we have a 3-technique position.
And I think he's, I don't know, I just think he's forgettable. I think we'll forget about him.
Well, yeah, because his role isn't going to be special. Right. He didn't even say that he's going to start at under-tackle, because he's not big enough. That's still Akeem Spence or adding someone else. His role is to get after the quarterback as a situational guy, which is what he did in Seattle. It's what he'll do in Tampa. And like you said, the price is right for that sort of role. So I think it's a win-win just all around.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing because they didn't pay him much. Had they paid him double what they paid him, then I'd have a huge problem with it. But in this case, price was, what was it, $3 million?
Yeah. And yeah, see, because here's the thing, is that a lot of people wanted to get the guy from the Cowboys. A lot of people wanted to get Henry Melton. A lot of people wanted to draft Aaron Donald. This is that same move. This is that same exact move. It's just cheaper, and it's not using a high draft pick.
Right.
So it's there's upside to it, because if he turns into a guy who can get 5 sacks as a part-time player, that's huge. So that's the kind of upside you have here. You're not putting a huge investment into it, and I think it's a good move all around.
All right, we'll move on to probably the biggest name, one of the names that was kind of floating around before all of the free agency began, and that was Elteron Werner. And, you know, I think it's a good move. I think bringing in Werner, good decision, but I think there's a depth issue at that position, and they didn't create more depth by doing what they did, but I've been told to not talk about that yet.
Yeah, we're saving the cornerback position as a whole for the next podcast. But yeah, for this one in particular, we'll talk specifically about Werner. And I think that this is an absolute steal, considering the money that Sam Shields and Aqib Talib and some of these other guys are getting out on the open market. To get Werner for just over $6 million a year is just an incredible steal for me. Elite guy in his one season of breakout. The issue is, can he sustain it? Because the things he was doing were elite level corner things. He was not allowing anything. He was showing incredible ball skills. He is very consistent, even on plays where he wasn't targeted. If you followed him on the field, you could see that he was winning. I'm going to mispronounce his name because I'm sure I do, but it's Kyan, I think is his name, Fahey. He writes for Bleacher Report and pre-snap reads. He does articles where he breaks down every single snap that a cornerback plays man coverage, not just the ones where they're thrown to, but every single one. He did it for Richard Sherman. He did it for a cornerback who used to be on the Bucks, who we'll talk about later. And he did it for Alteron Werner. And Werner, as a man-to-man cover guy, was on par with those two in terms of how frequently he was in the right position. And this, like I said, this includes every single play. The issue with Werner is he wasn't always doing it against the number one guy. The Titans had Jason McCourty. He was often seeing the number one guy. So a lot of times Werner was against the two. So the question with him is, can he take the step forward? Can he continue to improve? He's only 25. He's developing. He shows the signs and the skills to be that kind of guy. And so all you have to do is just wait to see if he takes that next step or if he's already taken that next step and he just needs the opportunity. I think he can. I have a lot of high hopes for this guy, particularly under Lovie Smith and Gil Bird, the defensive backs coach. I think that this is the only grade I gave it, or only signing I gave it A+ to in my grades, because I just think that this is by far and away just the right move in every way. Philosophy of the whole thing aside, and like I said, we'll talk about that, but as just, you got this guy for this price and what he'll bring, I think it's a slam dunk.
I can't disagree with any of it. Like you said, philosophy aside, I don't disagree with Alteron Werner. I think he's a good player. And there's one thing that you didn't really mention, that's takeaways. Mm-hmm. That is one of his strengths. He's incredibly, incredibly dangerous intercepting passes. He had a huge number of them last year. And throughout his career, he's done very well with that. And that's a Lovie Smith thing that you will not hear the end of. Believe me, I lived in Chicago for a little while there. During the Lovie Smith years, he never stops talking about taking the ball away. And Alteron Werner is perfect for that. He was able to do it in Tennessee, and hopefully he's able to do it in Tampa. That's going to be a guy that people are going to have Alteron Werner jerseys by the end of the year. I guarantee you that.
Yeah, he was, according to Pro Football Focus, because I just like to use their statistics because they chart them on their own. Werner was third in the NFL in interceptions and second in passes defended. So in terms of total getting his hand on the football, nobody got their hands on the football more often than Alteron Werner last year. He was right on par, actually just ahead of Brent Grimes, who was the only other person on that level in terms of being frequently around the football. He's recovered fumbles. He's forced fumbles. He's actually a very capable and willing run defender, which means that once Lovie teaches him how to strip the football, he'll be involved in that as well. He's a guy who does everything. He's versatile. He's young. I really don't see how, and like we've said, not looking at who he's replacing, but looking at who he is, there's no way to not like this move. And I think that this is maybe going to be the one that, when you look back on this offseason with the team being rebuilt, this is going to be the one move that you point to and say, that was the difference maker. That was the one that helped. Or you'll look back and say, all of the other moves sucked, except for that one. One of those two things is likely going to happen, because I feel like they made the right call at more than the right price with Werner.
And I can't believe they got the price they got because of how quickly he signed.
Yeah.
I mean, it was right away. I mean, I thought he was going to be a guy that was going to drag it out, because cornerback is a position that was kind of thin this year. And I would have guessed immediately that he would have gotten double that, because maybe not that much, but pretty close to 10.
There's no reason he shouldn't have got 10 if Talib's getting 10 and Shields is getting 10. Yeah.
And I think that says a lot about Lovie. I think it says a lot about what players believe in Lovie and what players think that this guy's going to take me to the next step in my career. And hopefully he's able to do that with Alteron Werner. Moving on to the last one that I'm okay with, and that's Anthony Collins. that's a little preview to the next two. But Anthony Collins, tackle, signed from Cincinnati, so that's another one that the Bucks stole from them. Again, pretty good deal, not too terribly expensive. And if you look at what Anthony Collins has done, he's incredibly solid. And I think he's going to help a line that suddenly, with the departure of Penn and Joseph, is a little thin, actually.
Yeah,
he's... in players, not weight of players.
Yeah. Well, even though they are going to get a little thinner by replacing Penn with Collins, and that's not a slight at Penn's weight in terms of like him being overweight. It's just that's the nature of the player that Collins is. He's
you just call him fat. You're mean.
You'd be surprised at how many people do that. And actually,
I know a lot of people do it.
You've still got DeMar Dotson, who's a pretty big dude. But no, Donald Penn played it between 320 to 330. Anthony Collins isn't that guy. He's not the big road grader. He's a pass protector who's quick on his feet, but he's not going to be the, he's not going to be necessarily the big bruising guy that you run behind every time. You can look at their heights, you can look at their weights, whatever. You look at the way that Collins plays, and he just doesn't let anybody touch the quarterback. He's not the best run blocker, but that can come down to scheme, that can come down to things like that. The number one thing for your left tackle is protecting the blind side of a right-handed quarterback. And assuming that the Bucks don't get Johnny Manziel, they're going to have a right-handed quarterback. Is Johnny Manziel left-handed anyway? I don't even know. I don't care. I don't.
Yeah, Bridgewater is, I think.
Is Bridgewater? I don't care. Whatever. Sure.
Either way,
DeMar Dotson's fine from the right side of doing this too. So they'll have both sides are covered from the pass protection standpoint. Until the playoffs last year, Collins didn't let a defensive lineman or a blitzer or anything touch his quarterback. Now, he didn't start every game. He did take over later in the season. And people will say, well, why was a guy who's this good and gets paid this much sitting on the bench? He was sitting behind Andrew Whitworth, who is a proven veteran and a Pro Bowler, and just there was no other room on that line. That line was very deep. It's not anymore. You're going to look at the Bengals this year and be confused as to how they would have let Anthony Collins go. But Andrew Whitworth is a stud, and the only reason that Collins got to play is because he was the best backup, and they found a way to get him on the field by moving Whitworth inside. Because their guard got hurt, so they moved Whitworth inside, and Collins started to tackle. If Collins wasn't good, they wouldn't have moved their best offensive lineman to a new position just to get him on the field. He's an impact player at his position. He's incredibly good as a pass protector, and it's something that you've really got to, with this, you've really got to consider his age doesn't show how long he's played. He's got a lot of miles left on the tank. He's very much like DeMar Dotson. Came on late in his career, has all the physical tools that you want, and is still kind of developing and learning. Colin set a great foundation for himself last year, and like you said, the price paid less than Penn for a player who was better than Penn, is younger than Penn, and just provides a future at that position that has ceiling beyond what I think we can even kind of think about right now, because if he develops into a better run blocker, he's franchise left tackle caliber at that point.
Okay, now on to the moment that made me realize that I really, really want Mark Dominic back, and that is when the Buccaneers decided that they would sign, and not only sign, but name Josh McCown the starting quarterback of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, well before the season's ever begun. I have no idea why we're declaring a starting quarterback at this point. Honestly, I have no idea why Josh McCown's even on this team, because he's essentially the ceiling of Mike Glennon, and Mike Glennon's floor is about what Josh McCown can be as well. So they're essentially, to me, mirrors, and I don't see why you need two bad quarterbacks on the same team.
I've been having this discussion a lot with people on Twitter, with people on Facebook, with people in the comment sections on our articles at the Pewter Plank. And I see the frame of mind of why are we signing a quarterback that's not any better than the one we have? Why are we naming a starter at this point? Why are we disrupting things? My point of view on it is this. Jeff Tedford was named offensive coordinator as soon as Lovie Smith was hired about 2 months ago. He's had 2 months to sit around and figure out his offense and see the guys that are there and see the players and the talent and how it's going to fit into what he wants to do. And so just like Davin Joseph was let go, just like Donald Penn was replaced, he had the chance to watch Mike Glennon that whole time. And one of the things he said during his introductory press conferences was he cautioned everyone and said, I can't really evaluate Mike Glennon until I know what he was told to do. I can't really evaluate him yet. It's too early. It's too premature to say who this guy is. Here are some things that I like about him. Throwaway compliment, throwaway compliment, throwaway compliment is basically what he said at his introductory press conference. And so now that he's had the time to consider who Mike Glennon is, he doesn't feel safe with him as the unquestioned starter at quarterback. And so to go out and sign a guy like Josh McCown, who's a veteran and probably could have stopped in Oakland or New York, or that's probably about it. There may be a couple other teams, and been handed an offer sheet that said, you are our starter at this price. When he came to Tampa, he probably sat down and talked with him and said, okay, what are your plans for me? And it may not have been a bargaining chip as much as just a point of the discussion, as we don't trust the guy we have, and we feel like you're capable to run the offense, so sign this deal and you'll have the front spot in the race for the quarterback position. Because, first of all, I think that things are going to change come May when the draft comes anyway, and the depth chart's going to be shaken up again. But also, I don't think that this signifies that either guy is the week one starter. I just think that this means that they're the OTA starter. Someone has to take the first snap. And if they just said, oh, this is an open competition, may the best man win, and then reports leak from the team that McCown was taking the first team snaps, everyone has a conniption fit at that point anyway. So you have to announce it at some point. And the better PR move is just to get it out of the way and say, as of right now, the guy who's going to take the first snap is Josh McCown. And then let it play out, because that's what the Seahawks did with Matt Flynn and Russell Wilson. It's been done before. You have to have a starter. Splitting up first team reps and stuff like that, it's not an efficient use of your practice time. It doesn't work like that. That's what the Jaguars do. That's what bad teams do. I'm sure the Raiders are going to split first team reps. You need to have a starter. You need to have a backup. They're not giving up on Mike Glennon, even though we don't particularly think that there's much to give up on there. But I don't think that it's a bad thing to say, hey, the veteran who had a better season last year gets the first snap. I think that that's a pretty fair way to approach the competition.
Here's the bad thing to me, and that is that what you've done is you've essentially signed another backup quarterback. You now have two backup quarterbacks on your team, and you have zero starting quarterbacks. And if you decide to go into the draft and pick a quarterback, which from all accounts does still seem possible, if they can land one of the top three, I think they are still in the mix to do that. And that makes me happy, because yeah, I still want a quarterback. But the fact is, if they decide to draft a quarterback, you've essentially wasted $5 million signing Josh McCown, because you have Josh McCown and his name is Mike Glennon. As far as a backup, if we're talking about starting and Josh McCown does take the first start, I'll agree that Josh McCown is better than Mike Glennon for week one, 2014. I'm okay there. The problem I have is that I think they need a quarterback, and I think they still know they need a quarterback. And despite Lovie's face when they started talking about Josh McCown, and no, I'm not going to get over that. I've never seen somebody happier in my life, but they need to find a way to get a legitimate quarterback. Josh McCown's not a legitimate starting quarterback in this league. He's done it for a half a season. He was very good under a guy who is supposedly a quarterback whisperer in Chicago. Do we have our own quarterback whisperer now? Maybe. But would you not rather put a good, young, budding star, like one of these guys that they can possibly get in the draft, at the helm, and then use Mike Glennon as your backup, therefore paying two guys substantially less than what you would pay Josh McCown? I just don't understand what the point is, unless it's like an insurance policy to where, in case the quarterback's not there at seven, which that shouldn't even be a thought. There's enough wiggle room at the beginning of this draft right now with a lot of teams saying they may want to move back. There's teams that want to move up. There's a lot that could go on. If you want one of those three quarterbacks, you can go get them. There's no question about it. So to sign Josh McCown and say, we're doing this just in case there's not a quarterback at seven, I don't like it. And if there is a quarterback at seven and they do pick a quarterback, then they've wasted money in picking Josh McCown, because you have the backup already. I just don't get it. Well, I just don't get it.
Here's the two things that I'll say to that. Number one is The Titans just signed Charlie Whitehurst, $4 million a year contract, and he's literally done nothing in the NFL.
Well, yeah, but that's but it's not about the money. It's I agree we got the best one, but it's not about who else we could have had. I'm saying it's no one. They should have signed no quarterback if they're planning on getting another quarterback.
That leads into the second point, though, is that Mike Lennon is still a tradable asset. We've tried to trade all these guys that we didn't want this offseason and haven't been able to because nobody wants them because they're going to get released because they're not on very good contracts. Mike Lennon is a tradable asset. Teams are going to be willing to give them something for Mike Lennon, and I would not be surprised if the Buccaneers do take a quarterback in the draft and are rapidly convinced that he is better than Mike Lennon, which, you know, depending on what you think about the fact that he's been benched and et cetera, means that could be the case, and that could mean that they can turn Glennon into something. And the other thing that's important to remember about McCown is that he brings something that Mike Lennon doesn't in not only a wealth of experience, but coaching experience. And he's only been a high school coach, but Josh McCown is going to be a coach. Josh McCown has that hold a clipboard, help you out on the sideline, mentoring kind of role that a good premier backup quarterback has. And that's not something Mike Lennon could have done. If Teddy Bridgewater is the Buccaneers quarterback next year and he comes to the sideline after throwing an interception, what the heck is Mike Lennon going to say to him? Mike Lennon's not going to... The only thing Mike Lennon could say is that I saw this from being 6'7", and here's what I saw that looked different because I'm taller than you. That's like the only advantage that he has. McCown has experience. He has coaching experience. By all accounts, he's just a super chill dude who doesn't care if he's the starter or the backup. He just takes his role in stride and holds the clipboard and helps people out. He was an asset for Jay Cutler. That's why Mark Trestman had him around, kept him around, made sure he was a part of the team. And I just think that's – I don't usually buy into this whole players as coaches thing, like this whole let's bring in X player to mentor X player. I really think the only position that matters is at quarterback – because we've seen it with Aaron Rodgers, with Brett Favre. We've seen it with, you know, insert X player here who's had a good backup quarterback. Mark Brunell was employed for 15 years as a irrelevant player because he could help other quarterbacks.
But Mark Brunell was not irrelevant on a team that is apparently strapped for cash to a point where they have to cut one of their best players. Moving on, we'll talk about that later. Brandon Myers, the last of the signings that has happened already. Yuck. That's all I have to say about Brandon Myers. No. I don't want Brandon Myers. I don't need Brandon Myers. He's nothing to me.
He's not bad, but he doesn't bring anything new to the team. I'm kind of confused by it. I mean, $2 million a year is not a very big price to pay, but it's $2 million that you didn't necessarily have to spend on a guy like that. If the thought is that you're getting a guy who can block and catch, I don't think that you hit the mark there. I think that he's more of a catch and pretend to block kind of guy, and you already had that in Tim Wright. I don't hate getting tight end depth. I don't want to ever see Luke Stocker on the field again. Nate Byam was not retained by the team. So you didn't have tight ends. You had Tim Wright and you had Crabtree. So you didn't have anybody. You needed to bring in some guys. I just would have rather got a guy who was maybe a better blocker. And I still don't think that that's out of the question. I still think that there's going to be another tight end who comes in. And I think that you may see four tight ends next year with Myers and Wright being the sort of passing game focused ones, with Crabtree being more of a special teams guy and a run blocking guy, and then depending on who the fourth guy is, hopefully it's a guy who brings some blocking to the table. Because I gave the Myers thing a C because the price means it's not offensive to me that they signed him, but I just don't see what he brings to the team that's new other than, hey, we can run two tight end sets now and the second tight end doesn't have to be Gabe Kareemi. That's about the only thing that it adds to the team for me.
For me, it's adding it. Yeah, depth is a good thing. It's something that Mark Dominic never really did during his time here, and this is certainly something that's happening. They are adding depth, and they are doing what they've said, which is creating less holes to give them more flexibility in the draft. I do agree with that, and I like that. But Brandon Myers just doesn't bring anything to this team that wasn't here before. Something that a guy like Michael Johnson does, a guy like Clinton McDonald does, Anthony Collins does bring something that this team didn't have. Even Josh McCown brings something that this team didn't have before. Brandon Myers, to me, the best he can be is what Tim Wright was last year. So, and Tim Wright's way younger and much cheaper. And I don't know, for there's enough picks. They have five picks. You can get more. You can move back if you need to. There are enough scenarios to where you could have found Brandon Myers in the draft in later rounds or pick somebody up off the scrap heap. I don't know. And then the other thing that bothered me with that is to then trot him up there and ask him questions at the same press conference as Michael Johnson and the same press conference as Elteron Verner and Revis is gone press conference. It's just awkward to me, and it proves that it's almost wanting to belittle everybody to say, look, we have four players. No, you don't. You have three players that you believe in, hopefully, and then there's Brandon Myers. It's not on the same level. Yeah. And to go up there and say, we got four players for the price of one, it's just wrong. And we're going to get into that a lot more as we get into the philosophy of what they've done. But you've wasted $2 million to me. And that's why I'm having a hard time grading just Brandon Myers, because I don't think he's that bad. I really don't. I think he's useful at times. But the fact is, they came out and they claimed that they were strapped for cash. And then they spent $2 million on Brandon Myers. That's my problem with Brandon Myers.
Yeah, and like I said, we'll get more into that in the next podcast. But for now, I agree that this isn't a pick that's any more than just depth, and $2 million might be a little more than you would ideally spend for depth. But I don't think it's offensive. I think it's just meh is the best way to describe it. But real quick, let's run over the couple guys that they've confirmed to have brought back. Just kind of rapid fire responses. Brought back Jonathan Casillas. Good thing all around. I don't think that there's
I love it.
I don't think that there's
special teams is good too. Yeah, that's great.
Brought back Jamon Meredith. I actually think that's a good thing, even though I don't want him starting. I think he's an ideal backup.
Yep, agree completely.
Brought back Eric Page, De'Veron Carr, Danny Gore. Sure.
Eric Page excites me a little bit because he has the ability to be something special in the return game. So that actually that makes me happy, because that's something that Lovey's done in the past. The other ones. If De'Veron Carr sees the field, I'm concerned.
Yeah, he may not make the roster. Those tenders aren't guaranteed. I think Gore is more likely to make the roster. I've always liked Gore. I think that he's probably the fourth or fifth corner on this team by the time next year starts. And I think that that's an ideal spot for him.
But I think they've done the right thing too in keeping some of these guys and letting Lovey take a swat at them to see if they can make them better than what they were before. Yeah. So I do like that for sure.
And then a couple guys who have left, Adam Hayward, special teams is going to hurt from that, but yeah, from a defensive perspective, not losing anything at all.
Yeah. I mean, he really surprised a lot of people on special teams over and over and over again. He was the one guy, but that's a very replaceable spot. You can always find that one good special teams player. They come off the scrap heap all the time, and you can grab one of those guys late in the draft.
Yeah.
So I'm not terribly concerned about replacing that.
Ted Larson can't complete a snap from center to the quarterback.
Problem. Yeah.
Penalties all over the place. I was never a huge fan of him. He was versatile, but so was Meredith. I'd rather have Meredith. And then Dakota Watson, this one actually disappoints me. I think it does you too. We both kind of liked him. I thought that he was a better strong side linebacker than Casillas. I think that he's actually a better fit in Jacksonville than he is in Tampa. So I'm happy for him. Special teams is definitely going to hurt with that. Dude was an ace on special teams, and they definitely need to replace that before the season starts.
Yeah, definitely a guy that kept taking steps in the right direction, but apparently not steps enough in the right direction. Again, a guy that I would have liked to have seen what Lovey could have done with. I think this is they're going to move Mason Foster. That's what I think that says.
That's definitely possible, because I've never been sold on Casillas as a full-time Sam linebacker. I don't think he's big and strong enough, so that's definitely possible. And then the two linemen that are gone, Davin Joseph, Donald Penn. I think that the writing was on the wall for Davin the whole time, and it was almost there for Penn. And since they were able to get a cheaper, better replacement for Penn, these are both guys that I like. These are both guys that I respect as longtime Buccaneers, but I am not really crying to see either of them go. I think that they were both either declining or already at the bottom in the terms of Davin. And, I'm happy to see that they're willing to move on from guys who were quote unquote established Buccaneers, just because they're not performing up to the level that they need to.
Both were getting paid far too much for what they were doing. They're certainly replaceable, and the Bucs proved it right away in signing Anthony Collins. They proved that they can get a player as good, if not better, for quite a bit less. So for me, that they both seem to make sense. I honestly was a little surprised when they decided to get rid of Penn. It seemed like a guy that they had a chance to keep around, that might have made sense to keep a little bit more depth on the roster. Not the end of the world. Like you said, I respect the guys. I like both of them. I think that both of them, it's going to be weird to see them play elsewhere. But both of them, like I said, overpaid. You cannot pay guys like that you're replaceable. And I say that now, and I will definitely say the exact opposite soon, but it is what it is in those two positions.
Absolutely.
And there's a reason. I have one specific reason why I say the exact opposite, and I'll get that later. What a tease.
Yeah, definitely you want to tune in to the next podcast. Any closing thoughts before we move on and set everybody up for what should be an even more exciting follow-up podcast?
Overall, you have to be happy with what they've done bringing in players on defense. I like Michael Johnson. I like Clinton McDonald. I like Alteron Werner. I don't think any of them are going to miss, which that's really important in free agency. You can't miss. When you give a guy a big contract, like, none of these guys get huge contracts, but it's kind of a situation where they're all players that you expect to come in and make an impact next year. And I think they made the defense better with adding those three players.
Yeah, I think that, like you said, you can't miss. I don't think that they've set themselves up with any huge risks here. I think that every player is safe. I think Collins is the biggest risk. But even then, I don't feel uncomfortable with it. So I think that it's the philosophy of everything that we're going to have more disagreements and discussions on. And that will come in the next podcast. So definitely tune back in a couple days, and we will have some more. If you were looking for Ken to be heated, like I teased on Twitter,
it's coming.
That'll be the next episode.
All right. Well, this has been the Pewter Plank Podcast, the edition where we talk about the new players, and I do not yell as much as I expected to, but there's always time for that. Keep tuned here, as I will be very, very upset in the near future. I'm Ken Volke, been here with Leo Howell. This is the Pewter Plank Podcast from thepewterplank.com. We'll see you soon. On top of the ship in Tampa Bay with them. Other teams forfeit, scared to play with them. Ain't no losing in the Raymond James Stadium. We made chickens out of Falcons, Cubs out of Bears.